Welcome to Inca Podcast, Play a Podcast. This is future Matt chiming in to give a little context to the episode that you're about to hear. So we recorded this episode several weeks ago, even before the ban list was updated and before any news that may have come out since then about this topic. So we do talk about the possibility of a rotation, and we talk about other methods that a game has in order to manage their metagame, such as ban lists. But we did not record this with the knowledge that we now have. We all know that the context has changed a little bit given the recent news, but we thought that it was still worth it to release this episode because the lessons are the same and the form that the future rotation is going to take is pretty similar to what we discussed in this episode. But just know that over the course of this episode, we are referring to a potential rotation and what that would look like without knowing the details that we now know. So I hope you enjoy, and as always, let us know what you think.
You can't leave me sounding like an idiot.
This all might be in here. I might not edit anything. I think that that's a good topic to discuss is kind of, you know, erratas and what they, kind of the future of the game with erratas versus bannings versus restrictions versus rotations, because they're all kind of the same thing, right? They are, how can we influence the metagame outside of just new set releases?
Right.
Because right now the metagames have been, I mean, fairly different, to be honest. Like, I'm pretty impressed with how different the metagame is every single time a new set comes out. Like, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, and you know that I have been barely adjusting my deck as new ones have come out. But this time, I'm trying to dive into new configurations. And
yeah,
that's been a lot of fun. And so, and I think it's necessary for the reason that you're saying is that everything else is changing. I can't stay the same.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think if you're going to, I can see both sides of it. You know, we have had the same good decks for quite a while now. At the beginning, you had much greater shifts as cards got released, but that should be expected when you're, you know, going from set one to set two, you're doubling the size of cards available, you know.
Yeah.
You know, set two to set three is a, what, 50% increase? Set three to four, you know. So it just gets smaller and smaller every set that's released. And you notice that when, God, what was it? Like, set four to five, I think, had probably the smallest ripple on the metagame, where there were some decks that maybe got, you know, a significant boost to be playable, but then you had something like Ruby Amethyst that was just like, yeah, I might play this one card. I mean, take the deck that won the EU Continentals. It was a Ruby Amethyst deck, and the only new card from the latest set was the Genie. And everybody was playing the Genie, but it was the only new card. And so it just shows that, like, every new set that comes out has a smaller and smaller impact on the current decks.
Until something big happens. Let's say, like, the discussion of a rotation.
Yep. And I think that that's a controversial topic. Rotation is definitely, I mean, I would say it's the most artificial limitation that exists of the possibilities, because it, it is completely inorganic to the game itself. But I also think it is simultaneously the most disruptive and the least disruptive of all of the options. And for people who don't know, a rotation, some other card games have something called a rotation where at a certain predefined time, a certain number of sets will no longer be legal to be played. So all the cards in that set are no longer legal to be played. So you can kind of think of it as like a mass banning, but it happens at a predefined time. Everybody knows, okay, you know, on June 1st, set one cards are no longer going to be available for play. So, you know, you have this understanding ahead of time, okay, by June 1st, I need to start thinking about what cards I'm going to be replacing these set one cards with. But then at the same time, you know, on the other side of the coin, you paid money for those cards. And to be told that you can't play them just because feels pretty bad.
Well, and that's when you end up getting the different types of tournaments, right? Where you'll get the current rotation, but also what, Legacy, is that?
That's what Magic calls it. I know Pokemon has rotation. I don't know what they call it. Magic does have, to you know, long story short, to not get overwhelmed with Magic, but Magic has two formats. It would be the standard format, which would be, you know, the most recent sets, you know, 5 to 8 sets of cards are in standard, and they're the most recent 5 to 8. And then you have the legacy format, which would be any card from any set is legal. And I think that that's a good system. If you're going to do rotation, I think that that's a good system, and it keeps cards playable, even if they're not a part of every format. But it also, one of the benefits of rotation is that you are not dependent on new cards being added to the game to shape the meta, which, as we can see, has started to kind of dip. You know, new cards aren't able to knock out older cards anymore. So if that doesn't happen, what's the incentive to buy the new cards?
Right. Right.
So I am, you know, I'm not going to say that I don't see the issues with rotation. I know that a lot of people in the community come from different card games that don't have rotation, and they definitely see it as a purely negative thing. And I can see where they're coming from, but I do, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm against rotation, because I think it is the best solution of a bunch of bad solutions to this problem that every card game is going to run into eventually.
I am very, if someone tells me the rules, those are the rules. It's also why I never think, oh, that card should not exist. Cause I'm just like, you know what? It exists. And we have to learn to play around it.
Yeah.
So I might hate a card, 100%.
Sure.
But
sure.
I'm not like...
Like Gathering Wisdom and Knowledge.
But that's personal. That's personal.
You think that card should be banned?
Just for you.
Only for me?
Only for you.
I'm not allowed to play that
card. You can't play that card.
Got it. Okay, understood. We can get into what that would look like for the game.
Individual.
I have my own personal ban list. No, not individual. Me specifically.
Oh, just you. Yes, yes. I think that can only help the game.
But yes, I have the same feeling as you, where kind of the rules are the rules. I don't know. I disliked Bucky, but I never felt mad at someone for playing Bucky. My feelings were totally, well, I'm just not having fun anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that was the extent of my frustration, which was, man, this card's annoying. I'm not having fun playing a game anymore. And so I was not unhappy when Bucky left.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, that comes right back to the same rule thing that when Ravensburger tells me, hey, that card wasn't fair, then I'm like, oh, cool. Thank you. I don't have to play that anymore.
So, rotation is one way that a card game can influence the metagame, right? So, if you think about the fact that there were certain people that did not like the fact that Ruby Amethyst won the EU Continentals, EU Championship, right? And it's because Ruby Amethyst, the core of that deck, the Mim Merlin package, I mean, that's been around ever since it was introduced in set two.
Right.
So there's only two options. You can either get rid of, I guess there's three options. You can either get rid of Mim and Merlin through bans or restrictions so that something else has to take its place by the vacuum that it left.
Well, hold on. Do bans or restrictions occur simply to change a meta? Like, I can see it with Bucky where people are like, this card is unfair. Like,
sure.
But can you say something about that? Like that about Merlin Goat? Like, I get it. Like, the combo works amazingly with bouncing and enter and whatever. But the card in itself doesn't feel unfair.
It's pretty innocuous, right? It looks pretty innocuous.
Right.
But you can tell that it's very powerful. It's very powerful. Most Amethyst decks are playing it.
Sure.
So at the risk of talking about a game that I have not played, I was never into competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! But being a competitive card game player, you know, you hear things, you research things, and it's very interesting. I always like overhearing other card game people, you know, when we go to our Lorcana nights. And I see, like, the Flesh and Blood players and the Star Wars players, and I hear their terms. It's always very interesting for me to hear that, kind of like a foreign language. But so you pick things up. So my understanding from Yu-Gi-Oh does not have a rotation. Yu-Gi-Oh, you can walk into a tournament, and any card ever printed, regardless of set, is fair game. But they do have a ban and restricted list that is fairly extensive. And so you will have, here, let me Google Yu-Gi-Oh! Ban and restricted list. So Yu-Gi-Oh! Will have a banned and restricted list that is fairly extensive and comes out every few months. So I'm looking at this one right here. It's effective from December 9th, 2024. The previous one was September 2024. And this one says the next update will be in a few months. So I don't know if people know exactly when the ban and restricted announcement is going to be. I don't know how far ahead of time they get notified that something will be changing. But I'm looking at this and it is, I mean, there must be 50 to 100 cards on this list. And this is changes. So Yu-Gi-Oh! Is based off of banned and restricted. So you have banned cards that you cannot have any copies of in your deck. And then you have the restricted list, which is they have a maximum of 3 cards in their deck. So ours is 4, theirs is 3. But they have restricted lists where it says you can only have one copy in your deck, or you can only have 2 copies in your deck. So they have this very granular way of modifying things. But you know, I'm looking at the banned list right here, and I mean, easily 25 to 30 cards are banned. And then the limited list is the same. The semi-limited list is the same. And then there's 10 cards that were taken off the list that are now available to play. So, again, I'll be honest. I do not like restricted lists. But to answer your question from a while ago, sorry. But to answer your question, yes, like Yu-Gi-Oh! Dictates their metagame through their banned and restricted list. So if something is dominating, they will either put a limitation on how many copies you can have, or they will ban it from the game. And that's because they do not have a rotation. So if you are not going to do a banned or restricted list, you have to do something that is better than the card that is causing the problem in order to get it out of the format, right? But that's power creep, you know? Like, that's how you get strictly better versions of cards, is you have to power creep it. And so if you look at Yu-Gi-Oh! Again, yeah, you could rock up with your, you know, set 1 cards, but none of those cards, very few of those cards are going to be good enough to be played in modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Because they've just power creeped the entire game to the point where those cards are unplayable. So in order to, you know, if we go back to the Mim Merlin package, you can either, if you don't like seeing the Mim Merlin package, you either have to make it so that those are not the best cards to be playing at any given time. And that's a tall order, because if you do that, it's very easy just to come up with a card that is, or a series of cards that is just more powerful. Right?
Right.
So you run the risk of power creeping. You can ban the card, but kind of like what you said is, why would you ban Merlin Goat? It's so innocuous. It's so good, but it's not oppressive. Right. You know, like,
It's combination, so it feels, that makes it dangerous, not itself.
Right. It's the combination. It's also just, you know, it's the consistency, and it's the rest of the deck that makes it pretty good. But there's nothing really egregious about Merlin Goat or Rabbit or Fox that make them problematic in a way that you would want those cards to be banned. And then when it comes to restricted lists, I am very, very, very opposed to any sort of restricted list. In Lorcana, as opposed to Yu-Gi-Oh!, you could have 3 restricted lists, right? So, you know, set 1, set 2, maybe even to set 3, people were coming out saying that Whole New World needed to be restricted. And these are people who are coming from Yu-Gi-Oh! Or from other card games that may have a restricted list as well. And they were saying, like, it works in our card game. Why wouldn't it work here? So, I mean, but you know, if you take that through kind of to its conclusion, is, let's say Ravensburger comes out and says, you know what, Whole New World, super powerful card, we're going to restrict it so you can only play 1 copy in your deck. It does not solve the problem that we're trying to solve, because at that point, either the card is good enough that it deserves to be banned, or it is not deserving of a ban. It is not good enough. It is not oppressive enough to deserve a ban. The only thing restricted lists do is increase the luck in the game. So games will come down to, oh, you drew your one of copy of Whole New World? I guess you won this game. And I think that that is unhealthy for any trading card game.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, frankly, one time I won a game because I drew my one copy of Judy Hopps. And
right.
Like, it literally did win the game for me, because otherwise right. I was going to lose to, I don't know, flutes or something. And there's always been this little bit of like, I guess I was really lucky there.
It doesn't feel like you earned it,
right?
Does it?
No. I felt happy that I had made the decision to add it to my deck. Yep. You know, that was my power there, was that I was like, well, I need some item removal, even if it's just this one, my right. just in case card. But overall it was like, oh dang, can't believe I drew that then.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to say, was it didn't feel like you earned that victory because you did not choose to draw that card. And to a certain extent, yeah, you earned it in the way that you built your deck in that way, so that you had that one of out, right? But I don't know. This game is, all card games, for the most part, are already... The all card games come down to the tension between luck and consistency. So when you look at a winning deck list, you are going to see a lot of cards that are maxed out. They are at four of copies. You have four Merlin Goats, four Merlin Rabbits, four Mim Foxes, four Mim Snakes, right? You have four of the key cards, because that is tilting this seesaw between luck and consistency more towards consistency. That's why it is good deck building practice to have card draw in your deck, because the more cards you draw, the more likely it is that you're going to get to the cards that will actually win you the game. It increases the consistency. But as with anything, you know, in a 60 card deck in a 3-game format, you're not going to see all 60 cards. And so there's always a randomness element. And, you know, playing against your opponent, you never know how they're going to disrupt you. So there's always going to be this randomness element. I don't like it when the randomness and the luck side of this equation gets artificially weighted by something like a restricted list, where it feels artificial and it feels like a half measure, and it does not produce more of the games that feels like I am the winner because I'm better at this game than you.
Sure.
It produces games where it says, I won because I got lucky enough to draw my one copy of this card.
Well, and I feel like limitations like that are going to turn instead into, and I mean, clearly that's not necessarily how it works in Yu-Gi-Oh, so I might just be wrong, but in my book, it would turn into, well, I don't want to be relying on this card I can only have one of, so I need to come up with a different strategy entirely and not use that card, and so then that it might as well be banned. Happen.
It does happen in Yu-Gi-Oh! there are several examples of cards where it's just like, yeah, we're gonna limit this down to one card because this card is super oppressive and dominant and everybody's doing it. And you know, like, there are examples of times in Yu-Gi-Oh! Where, okay, well, then we can't really use that because we can't rely on it, you know. As frustrating as Steel Song decks can be, the existence of Steel Song decks is a good thing for this game. And if you gave up a whole new world, if you banned it, or if you restricted it in any way, Steel Song would not be the same deck as it is in its current iteration. And that lack of diversity is bad for the game. Just doesn't matter how you feel about the deck. Doesn't matter if you're bored with the deck. It just, when you start cutting off the types of viable decks that exist, that is bad for the game. And you really should only do it as a last resort, like with Bucky. Bucky was oppressive to the point where people were not playing the game. I don't know if you were around, but locally, people stopped playing because of Bucky.
Oh, yeah. I saw people quit. I saw people quit.
Yeah. And, like, I saw the light fade from their eyes at, like, Ursula set championships, where they were like, yeah, okay, well, I'll be back later, maybe, if Bucky is no longer a thing, you know? And so that's really what bans should be, is I don't want a game that manages their meta based off of banning a whole bunch of stuff at once. So, you know, imagine if Bucky had just been limited to one copy. And now imagine you're sitting down against a Emerald Steel player, and they go through their mulligan process, and then they open up on turn one Diablo, turn two Bucky, shift Diablo, getcha. You know, you're like, cool. You know, like, guess I lost this game for no other reason than you got lucky. Because right. You only have one of those cards in your deck. You only have one copy. Like, that's terrible. That is such a worse feel bad. Like, it already felt bad when they were able to do that with four copies. But then you did the math and you're like, well, I guess it is a pretty good odds that you're going to get that. But then imagine the one in, you know, 15 games that they get in and they get it against you.
Yeah.
If they only have one copy. Terrible. Terrible solution.
For sure.
So I will fight against any sort of restricted list. Not that I have a say in it, but... So, the last thing, you know, if we're talking about how to resolve a meta, you know, the only other way is kind of what they did, which is that they changed the card text on one of their most problematic cards. So the Bucky errata is highly controversial, probably still is, for a number of reasons. And I am on the side of, I don't think they should have done that.
You don't think they should have done I
don't think they should have errated Bucky at all. I'm not saying that Bucky wasn't a problem. He definitely was. But erratas like this are not a good solution to that problem. Because it is a physical card game.
Yes.
Digital card games like Hearthstone have the ability to change the card text, and it just happens. All of the copies that people have on their accounts automatically get changed. And this happens a lot in Hearthstone, where something is a little bit more powerful than they mean it to be, and so they'll change the card in whatever way, right? It is very different when you have a physical card game to do erratas like this, because we all still have, you know, original Bucky in our binders right now. And so I think it was a bad idea to errata Bucky in the way that they did. Should this have been the way that he was originally printed? Probably, but that ship has sailed at that point.
Yeah. I would say that if there was a better plan in place for replacing the Buckies, that it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But I don't know what the better plan is. You know, like, there's so many players out there. How do you, I don't know, join a mailing list and they send you right. four Buckies? I don't right. know. But, you know, we know that we were supposed to get copies of the new Bucky when we bought boxes of Azurite Sea. We didn't.
No.
And that's part of the problem, you know?
Right.
If yeah. it was as simple as that, then maybe it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But they're always going to be out there. And so even if they did replace them, like, the others still exist.
Right.
And you know, if you don't, if you're new to the game and don't know about the controversy, then you probably don't even know that it's been replaced.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
But a banning wouldn't help with that either. If you're a new player and you come and you have Bucky and you don't know it's banned. So,
right.
I mean, that's a different issue.
Yeah, well, and I think they're related, but yeah, I agree. If they're committed to erratas, they need to have a much better way of distributing the brand new cards to people. But the problem is more, so first of all, they errated Bucky in a way to make sure he would stay dead, right?
Right.
If they wanted to say, okay, he has a problem, maybe we shouldn't have given him ward, or maybe he should be more expensive, or maybe he should trigger only on shifted floodborns. You know, if they wanted to do one, both, or all of them, they could have done that. And in order to keep him around, they didn't. They did all three, and it ensured that he is completely unplayable, right? So,
right.
How is that any different than banning him? You know, right. Like, it isn't. In a majority of instances, in 99% of all instances, he was banned. He was effectively banned from the game. But it seems like they didn't want to, like, have the negative publicity of having already banned a card. And so they kind of took this, like, half measure and did this errata where it's like, no, he's not technically banned. Like, no, you can still play him technically, you know?
Yeah. It makes it feel like they don't do playtesting, but they obviously do. But yeah. Did they playtest with these new rules? It doesn't feel like it.
I don't know. I would be very surprised if they playtested with the new version. It could be that the errata was an old version, right? And maybe they did playtest with an old version and decided that it wasn't good enough. So they pushed him a little bit more. And that was the Bucky that we have.
Oh, you're saying that the errata was actually potentially a... reverting like back to reversion, the original. Reversion.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And
I
have no idea. I mean, that would explain why it was so extreme. Yeah. They're just like, you know what? Never mind. Go back to the beginning with him. But
yeah.
It doesn't well, there's change a lot the of instances. It's a lot.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stories from Magic that you hear about, like, cards that were written one way during playtesting and then got changed at the very end, and they didn't playtest with the change, and then so it ended up breaking the card, you know, and it completely dominated. There's a lot of stories like that from Magic, but Magic's been around for 30 years. And so that is not an uncommon thing to happen, where I wouldn't be surprised if Bucky was a playtest error. Regardless, I think if you run a physical first card game, and Lorcana is a physical only card game, erratas are just not something that you have access to anymore. That's just not a tool in your tool belt in the same way that it is for games like Hearthstone. You know, Hearthstone has the same level of control when it comes to ban list, restricted lists, rotations, and then they also have erratas as kind of a pressure valve that they can turn when they need to. Physical card games just should not have that ability. If Bucky was a big enough problem, they just should have banned him. And now you've created this really weird situation with the erratas that says, I mean, like, no cards are safe. I don't mean to be, you know, reactionary to this, but you've set a precedent now. You've set a precedent that erratas do happen. It does not matter how much they said, hey, this is an extreme circumstance. Hey, you know, for X, Y, and Z reason, here's why we're choosing to do an errata as opposed to a ban. It doesn't matter. You've set a precedence now. And now everybody, I mean, as soon as Bucky was errated, everybody was like, oh, I think Hiram's going to get errated next. I think he's going to draw one card instead of two. Or I think Goat should be errated. Or I think Fox should be errated. And it's just like, no, stop it. Listen, if you have arguments that Hiram or Goat or Fox or Whole New World or Be Prepared or Maui, if you have arguments that those are bad for the game, let's hear them. And we need to decide whether or not we need, like, Ravensburger needs to decide whether or not they need to be banned or not. But it really should be one or the other. It shouldn't be, oh, Be Prepared costs 8 now. That is an inelegant, bad solution to a physical card game, and it should not be relied upon. Not the least of which is because if I buy a Maui for $15, $20, and all of a sudden he's errated, like, that is a terrible feeling. And it makes me lose faith that any of my cards are going to play the same way as they did yesterday.
So as far as the purchasing a card, I mean, like, that goes for banning cards too, though. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
Even more so, because, like, while Maui would, if it was errated, would become a less playable card, it would still be a playable card.
That's whereas true. Whereas
if it were banned, you couldn't, and that would just be lost money.
That's true, to a certain extent. Banned lists are only relevant to the format they're specific to.
Sure.
So what happens is, let's say we banned Bucky instead of errating it. And then, you know, sometime down the line, they introduce a rotation. And now you have a legacy format and you have a standard format. And Bucky is no longer in standard because he rotated, but now he is available to be played in the legacy format that should have a higher power level than the standard format. And maybe he's okay there. Maybe after 10, 20, 30 sets, Bucky is not the villain that he once was, you know? And if he is, ban him again. But you have to remember that, you know, ban lists are all context driven. They're all based off of the metagame, and they can be undone. I don't know how you undo a Bucky errata. There are new Buckies floating re-rata. Around out there now. Yeah, errata. I don't know. If there's anything that I hope from this game, I hope for no more erratas. I hope for no restricted list, and I hope for a rotation. And I'm sorry if, you know, people may disagree, and there are definitely reasons to disagree with that. But Ruby Amethyst has been a very good deck since set 2. And what I don't want to happen is for there to be a better Merlin card in the next set, and that is the reason why we stopped playing Goat. I would rather Merlin and Mim just, you know, screw off to the legacy format where you can have that archetype exist in the legacy format, And then Amethyst's identity can be something else. Because Amethyst does not have the identity of self-bounce. That is not what that color is supposed to be based around. That is what Merlin and Mim are supposed to be based around. And yet every Amethyst deck is now self-bounce. And I think that's unhealthy. So Amethyst has a lot of untapped potential to have its own color identity. You know, like, I really like the five-cost bell. I really like that that has seen a spike in play.
Yes.
Like, moving damage counters around is super interesting.
That's very interesting, because you had a very different opinion previously, and because you were all about, like, there's not damage on the board.
Right.
Like, why are we talking about damage on the board?
Right.
So.
But didn't I say that in the context of
a Mim elephant?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, like, you did. But
that's a bad card.
But my point was that as the game evolves, the damage left on board may become more relevant, you know, and things change.
Well, and I think it has, you know. So you saw Bell, Accomplished Mystic, become a counter to the evasive genie, because you can run your genie into their genie, play Bell, heal your genie back up and kill their genie on curve. Like, that is a very clean curve. And now you have two ink questers or two lore questers, right? Like, that is very efficient. That's very cool. I think I'm still right that damage doesn't really stick around. So, like, when you have a card like Mim Elephant, where it's like, what do you mean I have to play this, bounce something, wait a full turn, probably damage it myself in order to get damage counters on here at all, and then also wait another turn in order for this to do anything? No, I think that's just a bad card, and I think
everybody agrees at fair. That
point. But, you know, when you are able to manipulate damage in that way, you know, we see that a lot with Amber players, where they'll run something, they'll run a character into another character and then use Rapunzel to heal it to draw cards. Like, that's super interesting, and that line is available to them. I think if we didn't have the Merlin Mim packages, you know, that's 16 cards basically. But if we didn't have, you know, that core 16 cards that almost every Amethyst deck is going to play, you might see maybe a Ruby Amethyst deck that says, all right, well, I'm gonna lean into these self-damaged cards. I'm going to lean into these Teeth and Ambition. And I'm going to lean into, like, the 3-cost Bell that, like, moves 1 damage or something. I don't know. I just think Ruby Amethyst, and Amethyst specifically, has a lot more room to grow with their identity that I think Merlin and Mim are stifling because they're so good and they're so efficient. But, like you said, I don't think Merlin and Mim are good enough cards to warrant a ban. I think that would be silly.
Yeah, I think that there's got to be cards that you can create that aren't, like you said, a power creep.
Right.
But that make different elements of Amethyst more appealing.
Yeah.
And make you be like, okay, well, I can't spare the space for the bounce package.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's true. I'm not a game designer, but I'm trying to think of how we would how we would disincentivize the bounce package while not power creeping. So, I mean, like, let's think about this. Merlin rabbits have gone down in stock ever since Genie showed up, right? They occupy the same ink slot on the curve, and Genie is more difficult to deal with and quests for more and still replaces itself. It's not a draw engine the same way that Rabbit is, but if it ends the game faster, then it doesn't need to be. So that's a very clean example of, I don't know that I would call Genie a power crept version of Rabbit, but it could be
power rearranged.
Yeah, I mean, like, it could be argued that it is a more powerful card than Rabbit is, though. And so,
I think,
like,
that's context driven, absolutely, because
yeah.
in a situation where you're bouncing Rabbit, you're getting a lot more out of him than Genie, although you can bounce Genie.
You can bounce Genie, you can replay Genie. I think if you see the way that the meta has absolutely warped in order to be able to get rid of Genies, I think it's a more powerful card than Rabbit is. Belle is only played because of the Genie dominated metagame that it has created. And so, like, I don't know that I wouldn't call it a better version of Rabbit, but I think it is an indication of, yeah, I mean, it's a more powerful card. And so, like, I'm trying to think, what would cause Mimfox to fall out of the metagame, right?
So the her key factors are that suddenly thinking in Magic instead, and I was like, she has haste.
Yeah, she has haste, yeah. Yeah, she has rush.
She has rush. She's what, a 4/3?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep.
And obviously she contributes to the bounce package. She gets a lot done.
She does. I mean, she has the same issue as, like, set one Maui, right? And set one Rapunzel, which is, how do you make them irrelevant? You know, yeah. Like, Rapunzel, I would say, has fallen off a little bit just because of the Amber decks that exist now. But, I mean, it's a very fast metagame that we're in, and so Rapunzel might be a little too slow. But if you think about Maui, like, Maui is just the best at what he does. He is an inkable 5-cost, 6/5 rush, and that is so far and away the best thing that you could be doing if that is what you are looking for, you know. And you saw some people toy with, like, Hercules, and he's 5-cost uninkable, and at, like, what is he, like, a 7/3 or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and he was he wasn't even used all that much. He was used specifically to fight Queen's Castle. Yeah, he's a 7/3. He was used specifically to fight Queen's Castle. Queen's Castle has fallen out of favor, and so Hercules has fallen out of favor. People in Ruby Amethyst, at the very least, have been shaving on Maui's. But if you ever want a rush character that can almost be guaranteed to take out anything else, Maui's is going to be your best option. Where do you go from there? You know, like, I don't know what you do to make Maui unplayable or less playable. I'm not asking for an answer, but my point
is... I'm thinking of his basically only drawback is that he's reckless, but that's barely a drawback, you know,
right.
Like,
right,
that just means he has a job to do,
right? Exactly. He's a man employed. We love that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose someone with Rush, without Reckless, but therefore he needs to be, like, less strong, you know?
I don't know. Yeah, that's... But my point is that, like, how do you make a card that people are going to choose over Maui and also not in addition to Maui, right? So yeah. I really only see... I see one of three ways. I see you power creeping him, where you make a 7/5 that is all the same stats, except he has one extra power, and then Maui is gone, but now you have a new problem. You ban him, which again feels weird, right? Like, he's not winning games technically, so it feels weird to ban him, but he's just a very good, efficient card at what he does. He is the best at what he does, but it still feels weird to ban him. Or you rotate him, and that is no longer, you know, an option. So maybe you do have to look at the other, maybe you do look at cards like Hercules, you know, like, oh crap, well, I need some, you know, removal here. Oh, look, hey, here's a 4-cost rusher. Maybe I'll use that instead, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I also am over here like, I don't know, why can't we just be okay with Maui just being around forever? You know, like it, like you said, he's not winning the game.
Right.
He is a problem that usually deals with itself, unfortunately. Right. But then he's gone. And I don't know. I see where you're at with all of it. I suppose the one I'm hoping for would be a rotation, but that's partially because then you still have the ability to play these cards in a different format.
Right. Well, and one thing I'll say to your point, like, why can't we just have staple cards? You know, like, and we're always going to have, you know, the best cards of any color, regardless of rotation or restrictions or whatever. We're always going to have the cards that are the best cards of the color. But I would say, you know, if you're saying, well, why can't Maui just be that card? Why can't he just be the card and we don't have to mess with it? Yeah, he's very good and we're probably not going to get one better. I think my point against that is it reduces the decision making that you make when you are building your deck. In the same way that the 16 cards of the Merlin Mim package reduce what cards you're playing in any Amethyst deck. Where if you load up a Ruby deck, you're like, okay, start off 4 Mauis. Start off 16 Mims and Merlins. And then all of a sudden your 60-card deck goes to a 45-card deck, you know, that you are actually building and actually making decisions about further down the line. And I mean, we saw this, you know, we saw this when sets were released and the decks from the previous meta looked at the new cards in their colors and said, yeah, I mean, I guess I'll take that one and I'll swap it out with the worst card that I have over here. And that was the new deck for that meta. It doesn't help the meta evolve at all when you have a card that is clearly just the best in its class. And I think that stagnation is going to be very bad for the game long term. Will rotations help with that? Yes. That is the point of a rotation. From a game design standpoint, it helps with that stagnation. Will it help it more than it hurts the players who hate rotation? I don't know. people really hate rotation for good reason. But I don't know if the pros outweigh the cons, or the cons outweigh the pros. So I think it'll be very interesting to see what direction the game goes in. I'm very excited to see it. And I think we'll have to wait and find out. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening to Ink a Podcast, Play a Podcast. While I pull up all of our social media handles in case you want to get in contact with us, I think you told me that Bucky was completely fine with the metagame, and you think people were just babies for crying about it. Did you want to expand on that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was saying that you were a baby because you couldn't handle just how well I kicked your ass barely using Bucky.
Wow. You know, I don't know how to respond to that. I think I need to think I need to go off on my own, gather some wisdom and knowledge, and come back and formulate a response. In the meantime, if you guys want to find us, we are on all of the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, at Ink a Podcast. If you want to email us, send us a question, leave us a comment, do all sorts of things, you can find us at inkapodcast.com. Otherwise, thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
And then there's like outro music.